This is the Daily Night for Tuesday, January 5, 2016. This episode is brought to you by Geek Swag, original geek art and paraphernalia. Check us out at geekswag.me or our Facebook page at facebook.com/geekswagme. I'm your host, Gerardo San Diego, and today I'm going to talk about midichlorians. That's it. All I'm going to talk about is midichlorians all day. No, I'm not. I'm going to talk about some of my favorite movies and how they, for lack of a better word, how they dance, or at least there are moments in these movies that dance in one way or another. Now, dance is a very subjective term, and I'm going to talk about that. I titled Dances with Midichlorians just because I think it's a funny title. It's very opposite of each other. Dancing and midichlorians is about polar opposites of what you would expect. The force, you can dance with the force. I don't think you can dance with midichlorians. Just the term reminds me of the Dewey Decimal System in a public library, where the last thing you want to, you have a book in mind, you have a cool story that you want to read, and the last thing you want to deal with is the Dewey Decimal System and this cataloging and archiving and classification and taxonomy. It just takes the life out of you. It takes the dance out of you. So I'm going to talk about movies where they had their own rhythm. They danced. They had their own style. They were also impeccably written and acted. You can't just dance. You also have to have other qualities that go along with it. High quality movies. So I'm just going to jump right in. I didn't really elaborate too much on the notes. I just figured I'll just kind of freestyle it, talking about these different movies. So in no particular order, I am going to talk about, here's the quick list in case you're not on the website, thedailynight.net. That's thedailynight with a K, .net. So I did a quick bulleted list of these movies. So I'm going to read them off right now, and then I'm going to talk about each one of them. The Usual Suspects, Warrior, 13 Assassins, Whiplash, Glengarry Glen Ross, All the President's Men, Daredevil, Law and Order, and Suits. Those are three TV shows. Pulp Fiction, Star Wars, Empire, Jedi, and The Force Awakens, episodes 4, 5, 6, and 7. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Revenge of the Sith, and even the Darth Maul fight in The Phantom Menace. Jet Li's Hero movie, and The Dark Knight, and lastly, Casino Royale, the new, relatively new James Bond movie with Daniel Craig. I'm already losing my voice. Okay. So, dancing, the certain parts, to me, that evoked a cool rhythm, like in music, they call it hitting the groove. When you're in the groove, especially with jazz, when you're in the groove, you know it. And you can't explain the groove. You can't write a book about the groove. You feel it. And if you know it, you know it. And if you don't know it, then nobody's going to be able to explain it to you. And you're not going to get it. So there are these, and people have been talking lately about the beats. It hit the right beats in the movie, especially when they're talking about The Force Awakens. They said The Force Awakens hit the right beats at the right time. So think of it like a drum solo. Actually, let me bring that up right now. It's not in my show notes, but Neil Peart, I think that's how you say his name, Neil Peart, the drummer of the rock group Rush, he said he's one of the best drummers in rock and roll, if not music. And he actually adjusted his style after he met with a drumming guru, one of the godfathers of drumming. And he said what he did was, instead of just hitting the skins, using the sticks to hit the skins the way he did, his mentor taught him that there's a dance that you do, that you go from one drum head to another, and the movement, so there's a certain fluid choreography to it. And I think that's one of the things that attracts me to a movie, and a lack of it is what takes me out of liking a movie. So I know I'm focusing a lot on Star Wars lately, and this sort of addresses Star Wars and the prequels. And instead of me just, you know, I didn't prefer the prequels very much, but instead of me just bashing the hell out of the prequels and saying bad things about it, I'm going to talk about what I look for in a movie and some examples of movies that have those elements. And I'm going to focus on the whole dance thing, at least for this podcast. So, all right, here we go. The Usual Suspects. Hopefully you've seen most, if not all, of these movies. And if you haven't, I would totally recommend. But whether or not you wind up liking them for whatever reason, I totally recommend, because they are exciting enough in their own way, and they do dance. So the Usual Suspects, everybody knows The Usual Suspects, but the scene that I always remember is Verbal Kint in the interrogation room, in the police office, in the police department, where he's basically playing everybody to believe him. And there's a certain choreography of him, the way it's the way the movie's edited, the way Kevin Spacey delivers his lines, the way he moves physically, visually, but the way he leads the dance. If your dance partner's with him, let's say you're the audience and you're his dance partner, he's going to take you by the waist and by the hand, and he's going to lead the dance. So Verbal Kint is basically the dance master of this whole movie from beginning to end, but we only realize it toward the end, where he's basically pulling the strings. And the way they choreograph that reveal at the very end just kept leading up to it. And I think that's masterful. I've been saying that word lately. A movie that does everything right, or most everything right, is masterful. And you can't beat that cast. That's a top-notch cast of actors. Let me see. Let me check my notes. The Usual Suspects was written by, let's see. I bet you it's a full cast and crew. Oh, Christopher McQuarrie. All right, I know that name. It was directed by Bryan Singer. Huh. Talk about the taking it full circle. This is a geek podcast about comic books and superheroes. And The Usual Suspects was directed by Bryan Singer, who directed a couple of the X-Men movies, three of them now. And Christopher McQuarrie, he has written, oh my gosh, Christopher McQuarrie has wrote Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, the latest one out right now. He's going to write the next Mission Impossible movie. He wrote The Edge of Tomorrow. That's another great movie with Tom Hanks and Emily Blunt. Let me see. Usual Suspects. And he also wrote Valkyrie, also with Tom Cruise. So back to Usual Suspects. The movie, not just the end scene with Verbal Kint. There's also the police lineup scene, and Benicio freaking del Toro with doing his the Fenster. He flip ya. What are you talking about? He flip ya. I tell you, he flip ya. Or what is it? I'm not gonna cuss, but what they made them say in the police lineup. Put away your guns, you and sucker. So if you've seen the movie, you've seen the movie. You're pretty much all in on me with this. But in terms of dancing, here's the theme of this podcast is dancing. The dancing that happens in The Usual Suspects is in the dialogue, the snappy dialogue, the cutting back and forth between all the characters. The editing is impeccable. Ooh, I should add The Town. All these movies are coming up. Ben Affleck's The Town. All right, there's a little tangent. All right, I'm just going to write this down. All right, so The Usual Suspects, just if you have to watch it from beginning to end because it does have a certain pace that you got to get sucked into it, and then it tries to convince you of different things throughout the movie, and then when it does the big reveal with Kevin Spacey at the end, you're totally into it with both feet, and you're just letting the master lead you in dancing. So Usual Suspects. Next movie's Warrior. This is with Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton, and the movie is about of all things cage fighting. What is it? Mixed martial arts, MMA. The movie has it almost fools you into thinking that it is gonna be a slow movie. It reminds me very much of the original Rocky movie with Stallone. With the original Rocky and Warrior, it starts off very slowly. It starts off with you getting to know the characters and a lot of talking, not much fighting. But when the fight starts, especially the first match in the gym with Tom Hardy's character and the blowhard, and what Tom Hardy does to the guy, and you know he faces the guy later on again in the movie, just like with boxing, when people say boxing is like dancing, there is a dance, and if you do it right, it's a beautiful thing. Muhammad Ali, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Same thing with the Warrior. The way they choreographed the fight sequences, and Is it an R? It's a PG-13, and that tells you something. You feel the brutality of the fights in your mind, but they don't really show you the violence. Everything is implied, and there's a certain dance that you have to do in order for you to get to that point where you're buying into it, and the Warrior is. The big dance is the big fight at the end. And it's not just the fighting, it's the music that they play that leads up to it, and it builds up to it and builds up to it. And the way they cut back and forth, again, editing, I think, is as important as the proper direction, as proper directing in a movie, in order to really hit the proverbial right beats in a movie, and Warrior does that, especially the ending. But you, again, just like Usual Suspects, all these movies and TV shows, you have to watch through right from the beginning to the very end, or else you won't really feel the impact of it. It leads up to it. It's like a good symphony, like a good performance. So, Warrior, oh man, if you haven't seen the movie yet, I don't want to say anything because it might spoil it for you. And it is a movie that is very easily spoiled because the impactful moments oftentimes are the reveals and the surprises. And you just have to watch it. Warrior, it's in my show notes. Go see that. Beautiful. And if you want to see Tom Hardy, why people looked forward to him being Bane in the Dark Knight Rises. If you see him, the way how built he is, but also how imposing he is in the this movie Warrior. It's in my opinion, it's a movie that should not have been as good as it became, because the premise is, when you think about it, it's not that big a deal. I can tell you the premise. The premise is basically two brothers, Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton. They're two estranged brothers that haven't seen each other in years. And the third character is an alcoholic father who is now a recovering alcoholic, played by Nick Nolte. So you have the three of them trying to resolve their issues, and that's the basic story. The MMA stuff is just a lot of the family resolution happens in that final match. Beautiful, beautiful movie. All right, speaking of fighting, 13 Assassins. It is a violent movie. It is R-rated. It's a Japanese film. It's subtitled. I would suggest you see it subtitled. You'd have to read the subtitles. But whenever somebody brings up Wolverine and his berserker mode to me, and how they've portrayed Wolverine, Hugh Jackman, in the movies, I often tell people I wish they would show him in pure berserker mode, like in the comic books, where it's Wolverine against 100 ninjas, 100 people all at once. And they've yet to show that. They've yet to show a long fight, long drawn out, bloody, brutal fight with Wolverine and 100 ninjas, 100 people. We get that in this movie, in 13 Assassins. We get what happens is you have 13 assassins. They're basically hired by a warlord who wants to keep the peace in the land, but there's this rogue warlord who is just doing his own thing and killing everybody in a stupid way. So they had to find people to assassinate this crazy warlord. So they hire these 13 assassins that they're not famous, they're out of nowhere, and they have to fight this crazy warlord. The last 45 minutes of this movie, the final act, is literally a 45-minute samurai fight that will blow you away. It will blow your mind. It is the biggest hand-to-hand combat fight that I've ever seen in any movie, including Jet Li movies, including Kurosawa movies. You basically have 13 assassins fighting, I think it's about 200 or 250 soldiers of the crazy warlord. And they do it in this small town that they barricaded so that they can keep the fighting within the grounds. And their end goal was they have to kill everybody. The 13 assassins they actually have to assassinate the crazy warlord. But to get to him, they have to go through all the 200 and 250 soldiers and bodyguards. The way they choreograph the fight scenes in 13 Assassins is masterful. There are some things that they do that I've never seen in any other movie. And then when I saw it, it's like, oh, that totally makes sense. Why didn't they do that in previous movies? It's almost as if they lived it, this type of fighting. And I'm pretty sure they did a lot of research on what people did back in those days in feudal Japan. So 13 Assassins, there are some very gruesome parts in the movie, so don't let your kids watch it. It is a hard R, and there are some scenes of torture and stuff that I personally skip through. When I watch it, a lot of times I will skip through the chapters where they're talking and the exposition part, and then just skip right to the big battle at the end. All right, next movie that dances, Whiplash. If you haven't seen Whiplash yet, it was the drummer movie. It was one of the best movie nominees of 2014. And it's about a drummer that is tortured by his music teacher. The dancing in this movie is the drumming, the music. It's also big band jazz. Caravan is Art Blakey, I think, is who did Caravan, and there are about three big musical pieces, and then that finale musical piece with the drum solo. The movie in general to me is pretty good. It's not fantastic. It's not like every moment in the movie is gold, but when it does the drum stuff, and especially the drum solo, it's one of those movies that will make you stand up and cheer or scream at the very final part. Right when the movie ends is when you freak out. So that's another. The dancing. Again, back to Neil Peart with the drumming, with Neil Peart of Rush, the drummer. There's a certain dance. Pretty much playing a musical instrument, there's a certain dance that happens. If you're doing it right. So, especially with jazz. All right, next movie. Glengarry Glen Ross. If you haven't seen this movie yet, especially if you haven't seen... let me get this name right. Alec Baldwin's Moment. He's literally in this movie in two scenes. And I think he won the best Oscar for supporting actor. Literally just on that, I think it's not even a 10-minute scene about ABC, always be selling. Always be closing, sorry. ABC, always be closing. That scene by Alec Baldwin was the highlight of the movie. But there's also a whole bunch of beautiful dialogue, just rich words. That's another way to dance, is by rich dialogue, an amazing script, great acting, great natural feeling acting. Because if it's not natural, if you look like a statue, if you look like you're nervous, if you look like you don't know the material, if you don't have the zen of the whole acting part, even if you're a great actress like Natalie Portman in the prequels, you will look like a cardboard cutout or a shell of your true acting self. But in this movie, it looks like they let the actors riff a little bit sometimes on the scenes. It looks like they shot the scenes multiple times from different approaches, which sort of makes sense. And then they edited it properly. They took the best performances and they put those in the final product in the movie. So Glengarry Glen Ross. If you love movies, you probably have seen Glengarry Glen Ross already. It was also a stage play by Sidney, was it David Mamet that wrote the original? Yeah, the screenplay and the play was David Mamet, the playwright. So that's Glengarry Glen Ross. Continuing with these talky-talky great performances by actors, that you really have to spend time with it to appreciate the verbal, the mental psychological dance that happens. The next movie is All the President's Men, with Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, as they are again one of it won a ton of awards. It's about the Watergate scandal, and it's based on an actual story by from the Washington Post's reporters, Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, exposing the Watergate scandal with President Nixon. So that really happened. They made a movie out of it. The dancing in this movie, you actually get an indication of it right at the beginning. The very first sound of the movie is a typewriter key, the old manual typewriter before you plug them in, when you actually had to use force to hammer your finger down onto the key, and the hammer goes onto the paper and, you know, slaps ink on the piece of paper. The very first sound of this movie is that. Pam! Of somebody writing a newspaper article. And that sets the tone for the rest of the movie. Is basically, we're going to talk about journalism, we're going to talk about newspapers, about it's a political thriller, it's investigative journalism. And this is, in my opinion, one of the godfathers of investigative journalism movies that have come out since then. Another one is The Insider with Russell Crowe, investigative journalism, and that has Al Pacino in it as the journalist. And that's also based on a true story, the tobacco industry. So, yeah, The Insider, let me check real quick. IMDb, The Insider. yes, The Insider with Russell Crowe. Good movie. All right, next on the list. I listed these in as a group, which is the Netflix Daredevil show, the Law and Order, the police procedural, and the show Suits, which is still on the USA Network right now. Suits is one of my favorite shows on TV right now. It has the same snappy dialogue, well-researched, well-acted. I think it's one of the most successful shows on TV right now. It's a big deal. But it totally reminds me, these three shows have the common aspect, at least in my opinion, of the police procedural, content-driven, great acting. You actually have to listen to the words that they say, because all three of them don't have huge explosions. Daredevil does not have huge explosions. It has a lot of actions. No, it doesn't have a lot. It has as many action sequences as they could afford on their limited budget. But the Daredevil is driven by great acting and a great script. Bottom line. And even the choreography in Daredevil, you can say the choreography during the fighting is a big deal. Pardon me. The choreography in the fighting, especially on episode 2 of Daredevil, which is hopefully you've watched the Netflix Daredevil series already. And if you want to kind of treat yourself before you even get into the story, go watch episode 2 first. And then go watch episode 1 and then 3, etc., etc. I accidentally did that. I don't know how I did it, but I got hooked onto the show immediately after watching episode 2. So that's an aside. Daredevil is it's them investigating, revealing things. Great. No-nonsense acting. I think that's part of it. There's a difference between no-nonsense, great acting, and stilted acting. And that is, stilted acting does not feel natural. It feels like a middle school play where, you know, the actors are kind of nervous, or, you know, that's not to bash on middle school plays, but you know what I'm saying. Stilted acting feels amateurish, feels like it wasn't... the actors didn't get it. Before an actor can stand in front of a camera and act, they first have to get the character that they're portraying, at least in my opinion, and that's what I've read. And in these three shows, Daredevil, Law and Order, and Suits, the actors get it. In Suits, the main character is a genius savant who never went to law school, but he has eidetic memory, a photographic memory, so he can remember everything, and he's also smart. but he didn't have the money to put himself through proper law school. And so he kind of faked his way up to become a lawyer. Again, see, if I tell you the plot of Suits, it sounds preposterous, but because it is so masterfully executed in terms of the creating the show, you totally buy into it. Again, the suspension of disbelief. So Suits, highly recommended. It's on USA Network. I think they're going to resume the season soon. They're on hiatus right now. So Daredevil, Law & Order, and Suits. And anybody who's watched Law & Order knows how awesome it is. You know what? Law & Order SVU? Was that the show? No, which one? Law & Order something. Has Vincent D'Onofrio as one of the main characters. He used to be there. But he is now Wilson Fisk on the Daredevil Netflix series. So it kind of tells you, look at the background, acting background of the stars of Netflix's Daredevil. And they have acting chops. They are not superhero type actors. They are actors. And they've been in some meaty script dialogue stuff. And it wouldn't surprise me if they were in Broadway plays where you have to emote your acting ability to a room of people live. And there's a sort of dancing that goes on with that also. Hitting the right beats. Here's a little tangent. Shakespeare, his sonnets, his Elizabethan sonnets are 10 syllables each line. That's what they dance. They there's a certain rhythm to them, and you get used to it. And there's a it's not even that. If you do it naturally, the words flow out of your mouth. So let me take a drink real quick. Okay, so next movie, Pulp Fiction. That's easy. This is a no-brainer. All you got to do is think about Samuel Jackson's, what is it? What's his name? His Bible spiel. Samuel Jackson, yeah. His, I am the shepherd speech. Perfect. Another moment in that movie where the Jackrabbit Slims, the dance competition. I mean, that's literal dancing, but also the back and forth between John Travolta and Uma Thurman. How they're kind of one-upping each other with the dialogue. And then it ends with that's a great $4 shake. You know, the final punchline. The movie dances in its dialogue. And I think Tarantino is spectacular with making the dialogue dance in his movies. Any of his movies, the dialogue dances. Even Django Unchained, such a weird theme to it. But his screenplay, his script dances. I almost feel bad that his Hateful Eight movie is up against Star Wars right now. I wish it was on its own schedule. So we could celebrate it more on its own than being lumped into this whole Star Wars madness that's going on right now. But Quentin Tarantino, Pulp Fiction, you've probably seen it already. So the next one is, the Star Wars Empire Jedi Force Awakens, episodes 4, 5, and 6, and 7. 4, 5, 6, and 7. Whole bunch of dancing sequences going on in there. Just they call it space opera. The majesty, the way the spaceships move, that signature move by the Millennium Falcon when it's avoiding the asteroids, where it you see the underbelly of the Falcon, and you, Star Wars fans will know what I'm talking about. Just what I'm saying right now. And then they sort of did that in The Force Awakens, where it's a side view of the Falcon, and then it gets closer toward the viewer, and then it tilts up so you can see the underbelly of it, and it tilts down again. there's a fluidity and a natural, and it dances. Who knows if that would really happen in real life, right? Do fighter jets actually fly like that? It doesn't matter. It looks right on the screen, and it looks like it was effortless. Dancing, choreography. The dialogue in Star Wars, just the back and forth between Leia and Han, your highnessness, your worshipfulness, your worship, and the back and forth between Han and Luke. I don't know, do you think a princess and a guy like me could? No. There's certain, again, the beats that, I'm snapping my finger now, the beats that hit, that. And even the TIE fighter battle, where Luke is in one Millennium Falcon cannon and Han is in the other Millennium Falcon cannon, there's a certain choreography to how the fights are going. Beautiful stuff. And it's effortless. And they know, well, keep in mind that the original Star Wars movie was edited by three people. I'm going to look real quick. IMDb Star Wars. And I, from what I remember, I was just talking to a friend about this earlier. Star Wars 1977. They won an Editing Academy Award for editing. Let me see. Edited by Star Wars New Hope Academy Awards. All right, I'm looking up Academy Star Wars Awards, IMDb. Yeah, there it is. It won an Oscar. Besides all the visual effects Oscars that all the Star Wars movies wins on a regular basis. So the 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It won 7 Academy Awards for art direction, costume design, best sound, best visual effects, best music, John Williams, and best Burt as a sound design. But the one that stands out in terms of the Academy Award that Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope won is in Best Film Editing. Now keep in mind, Star Wars was up against, who was it? The best movie of that year was Annie Hall. That was, what's his name? Annie Hall is, I'm bad at this. Woody Allen. All right. Annie Hall. And Annie Hall won Best Movie, but Star Wars won Best Editing. And it's by Paul Hirsch, Marshall Lucas, and Richard Chu. They each took home an Oscar, the three of them. From what I've read, and it's sort of obvious on the screen, George Lucas filmed the movie, he was director. He filmed X amount of raw footage. And what Paul Hirsch, Marshall Lucas, and Richard Chu did with the raw footage, how they edited the hell out of this movie. And then you combine it with John Williams' music. That is the magic of Star Wars. You edit it so it dances. And again, I said, besides directing, I think editing is the next most important, or tied with the most important aspect of the success of a movie. If you have to be able to know when to stop the scene, when to extend the scene, even just for one extra beat, if the scene is too long, then you diminish its impact. And the dance isn't as cool. So, Star Wars A New Hope, you got the amazing editing. Empire had that opera going on where the dancer is the Millennium Falcon. It goes from Hoth to the asteroid field, onto the Star Destroyer, onto Bespin, against the Super Star Destroyer, and then back to the Rebel fleet. And the Millennium Falcon is the container in which the characters were inside when they were dancing. And and then, of course, you combine it with the John Williams music, and it is beautiful. I think you take out the Millennium Falcon's movement in The Empire Strikes Back, and then you have a movie score that's not as good as what John Williams have, and The Empire Strikes Back would nowhere near be the favorite Star Wars movie of a lot of people. So, the Yoda scene. That's another, the Dagobah with Yoda. That's dancing. His whole philosophy. He was basically a preacher who was preaching in a quiet way. And then he would raise an X-Wing out of the bog. So, just beautiful. The whole Bespin sequence. Visually beautiful. And even the way the twin pod cloud cars are flying around Bespin. You have the orange colors going on. And the way they intercut one scene from another. Again, that's dancing to me. Proper editing is dancing. And there's no, well, very, 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 very few times in episodes 4, 5, 6, and 7 where they're just standing around doing nothing or just talking. It's always, when you think about it, in episodes 4, 5, 6, and 7, when they show Han Solo, he's either fixing the ship, he's running away from something, he's running towards something, he's about to fight somebody, he's having an argument with Leia, he's helping rescue Luke, or he's pitching a tent on Hoth after cutting open the Tauntaun. So there's always movement. And Harrison Ford is, it kind of makes sense because he's a carpenter as well as an actor. So he's always doing something with his hands instead of just standing there talking. Actually, a good, Quentin Tarantino does a pretty good job of just having his actors stand there and talking, but at the same time, you know, you notice that they're always about to do something, just did something, or they're it's not just them discussing something. There's something else happening. There's again, and then there's this the choreography. I think I'm blabbering now. I'm gonna stop myself. I'm gonna go to the next movie. All right, so The Force Awakens. This is what sold me on The Force Awakens. The big lightsaber fight at the end, where you have the teaser lightsaber fight with Finn and Kylo Ren. As a little teaser. That's what everybody thought. Oh, they're going to have a big fight and Finn's going to be a Jedi, blah, blah, blah. And no, there's an even bigger fight right after that with Rey and Kylo Ren. And that's where the music gets pumped up, and that's when you start the dance. And that dance is very similar to Return of the Jedi with Luke and Vader on the Death Star. People are comparing Rey's fighting skills with Luke, even when she lunges forward with the lightsaber, with the initial attack. Again, dancing, beautiful choreography. Not just choreography, because you can choreograph the hell out of a lightsaber fight, but if you don't edit it properly, if you don't cut it short enough so it doesn't get boring, and if you have the music just isn't bringing it, pardon me for the drawling on this. The big lightsaber fight in Revenge of the Sith, it's too long. It's like, we get it. They're good at lightsabers. And they're going to go. Here's Obi-Wan and Anakin fighting on the ground. Here's Obi-Wan and Anakin fighting on a piece of metal sticking out of the ground. Here's Obi-Wan and Anakin fighting near some lava. Here's Obi-Wan and fighting sideways. Here's Obi-Wan and Anakin fighting with their backs turned to each other. Okay, we get it. They're really good with lightsabers. They could have cut that thing shorter, and would have made a bigger impact. I think the bigger impact would have been if there was more dialogue, actually. Especially the end thing where, you know, Anakin, I hate you. Like, you know what? David Mamet wouldn't have written the I hate you like that. It would have been more exposition. The list of movies that I've listed, let me see. Are there any movies that I've listed that have lazy dialogue? No. No. All the movies that I've listed have really tight dialogue that they've worked on. Let's see. Jet Li's Hero. Let me go to Jet Li's Hero after the Dark Knight. Speaking of which, dialogue. If Heath Ledger didn't freaking nail the Joker with a dialogue, all the makeup in the world and all the action sequences would not have saved that movie. But Heath Ledger started, I think, from what I heard, he hung around Chicago and he talked to the locals and he started to build up his Joker style after having talked to the locals. And sort of a mix, a friend of mine mentioned he sounds a little bit like, who is the Second City guy? Al Franken. Yeah, hi, I'm Al Franken. Look up his name, Al Franken. I think he's a politician now, was a politician. But his style very much sounds like Heath Ledger's Joker. And there's supposedly a Chicago accent in there. There's a, you can kind of feel like a metropolitan feel to it. A wise ass, a little comedian. But that's Heath Ledger's dance. There's certain beats that he does, you know, oh, want to know how I got these scars? And how he dealt with the mobsters in that meeting. And how, even the simplest way that he used that pencil on that mobster. Remember the pencil scene? That is a dance. That, oh my goodness. And that just a little 2 second moment. And if that scene wasn't there, and if I'm trying to remember the bat pod scene, there's a choreography for you. The semi, they had to have hit that beat right at the right moment when the semi turns over in the bat pod fight. If they had made it too long, it would have been us like, okay, let's get on with it. If it were too short, then we wouldn't have felt the impact. Again, maybe I should have called this editing with midichlorians instead of dances with midichlorians. But it's about timing. Actually, you know, timing. I took piano lessons when I was a kid, and one of the big things that they say is you can learn the piece. You can hit the notes according to what's written on the sheet music. But if you don't pause at the right time, slow down at the right time, speed up at the right time, and take your time, even though you're tempted to just rush through it, it won't feel right. And again, that's a musical performer editing himself or herself so that it hit the right beats, literally and figuratively. So that's the timing. That's another thing. If there was anything besides the lazy script that I feel was used in the prequels, it's the timing. It felt like, for the lack of a better description, it felt like a documentary that was the camera was just turned on, and it didn't feel like it was choreographed. But you know what? A whole bunch of documentaries that are wonderful. Check out Jiro Dreams of Sushi documentary. I'm going to write this down so I can add it to the show notes. Jiro Dreams of Sushi. That is a documentary that is shot like a feature film. Because when you see them preparing the sushi, it looks like a dance. It looks like it's art. Especially the music is amazing. The quality of the cinematography is amazing. And they're also the subject matter is the best, arguably the best sushi chef in the world. So, yeah, Jiro Dreams of Sushi. What an I put that movie on just to calm down, just to watch it and kind of zone out. I don't want to say zen out, but it's more like zone out. But yeah, Jiro Dreams of Sushi. I can't recommend that movie enough. Hopefully, you're not a vegetarian and you're not insulted by them preparing fish. So, okay. So the next one is Casino Royale in terms of how the movie dances. Well, James Bond is famous for the hitting the right beats. Because you have the smooth talking, suave James Bond to begin with, and that's inherent in the character of James Bond. Or if you're a smooth talker, that means you're dancing with your dialogue, you're dancing with your sexual prowess, your imposing character, even the way he says his freaking name. He doesn't just say, "Hi, I'm James Bond." No, Bond. James Bond. There's a beat to it. There's a certain rhythm. The way he does things. His car, his Aston Martin, has a certain beat. The way they do things. And when just at that right moment in every movie, you get that dan-an, 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 just at the right moment. When you know it's like, oh yeah, that's right. That's how, this is where we are in the movie. Actually, in Star Wars, you got that that same whenever they hit that, you go, oh okay, it's at the right time. If you put that at the wrong time, then it kind of loses its impact. So okay, Casino Royale, James Bond, the that's with Daniel Craig's first James Bond movie. The chase scene at the very beginning with the what do you call those guys, the free runners. Him chasing that guy through the construction area, is beautiful. That's dancing. Anybody who says that's not dancing wasn't on the movie site to see them choreograph that thing. That it, again, masterful. And also, it felt real. There's a certain impact. Actually, let me address this. Most, if not all, no, I'd say all of the movies that I've just listed as my favorites, there's a physics to it. There is a weight to the weight and an impact to the action that I didn't find in the lightsaber sequences in Revenge of the Sith or The Phantom Menace. As much as I love the Darth Maul fight, it felt like they weren't really fighting. It felt like they were practicing. Because it seemed, it went beyond the suspension of disbelief. It felt like magic with the lightsabers. Now you compare that with lightsabers in A New Hope, and I arguably it's the best lightsaber sequence, is the fight with Luke and Vader on Bespin in Empire Strikes Back. It looked like it would hurt if you got hit by a lightsaber. I mean, really freaking hurt. And the way that the impact, it, you know, the way that lightsaber hit you, it hurts. And so, it, actually, you know what? Not as much in Return of the Jedi, even though it was really good. but it wasn't as impactful in Return of the Jedi as it was in A New Hope, and actually not as much A New Hope, but Empire Strikes Back, and then The Force Awakens. That was brutal. That was very close up, intimate lightsaber fighting, and you could have had them fighting with regular swords, and it would have been the same fight and just as exciting. Especially that scene where Kylo Ren pushes the hilt of his lightsaber against Finn's shoulder and burns him. Nasty stuff. You know, it's like in a traditional sword fight where you're trying to get any advantage on your opponent. Is you'll try anything, any dangerous part of the sword or whatever you have, you try to get the opponent with it. But yeah, there's that weight. And in addition to the dancing, it has to feel, the physics have to feel right. Tangent this to the video games. If you play a video game that has crappy physics, it doesn't feel believable. I play some first-person shooters, FPS, and when I talk to other people on discussion groups about, is this FPS worth playing, many times they will bring up the physics of it. Did it feel like when you shot the gun, did it feel like it had recoil? Did it feel like when you got shot, did the impact feel like what you think it should feel like, as opposed to you just getting slapped? The Star Wars Battlefront game, I think they nailed the physics of that game and the impact of the sound. The game is also, go off on another tangent, if you played Star Wars Battlefront, there's certain modes in there, like the Walker Assault, where whenever there is an important scene, like yeah, you have to attack the walker. Attack the walker now. The music changes to an attack music. Again, that's choreography. If that music was not playing, or it was playing at the inappropriate time, you wouldn't feel as good. You wouldn't feel the impact of the game as much. But sure enough, they timed it. I think that's whatever your opinion is on Star Wars Battlefront, that aspect of the way they make you nostalgic for the Star Wars movies, the original trilogy, I think they hit it square on. I think they nailed it. So let's see, getting close to almost done. Jet Li's Hero, just watch it. It's the whole movie from beginning to end is one big dance, one big beautiful, colorful, heroic, tragic, emotional, suspension of disbelief. There's some fantastic things that happen in the story that once you buy into the movie, it hooks you and it keeps you. They change the color theme throughout the movie to evoke a certain emotion. Yeah, just watch it, and just in terms of dancing, a movie that dances, a movie that is not about dancing but dances, Jet Li's Hero is it. What else? Yeah, and actually, I don't know if I mentioned this or I totally skipped over it, but just the fact that the movie has a good premise, has an awesome story. Like, hey, I told my friend that this is what happens, and this is what happens, and this is what happens. Or has a great screenplay. If they don't execute the creation of the movie properly, like let's say you have a great script, and then you give it to a team, and they film it, but the editing isn't top notch. And the movie scoring isn't top notch, and the actors sort of didn't get the role that they were playing. You're already behind the eight ball. You're already in trouble because you have three of the most important aspects of a movie that's not top notch. And, you know, good luck. That reminds me, you kind of have to feel bad for the actors in the prequels, because there was so much secrecy with the project that the actors, How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, great book, How Star Wars Conquered the Universe. The book says that the actors oftentimes didn't even know what they were going to act out the day before they acted it out. Like, they would come into the studio that morning, and then they were handed the script for that day. So it's not like they were able to practice that stuff at home, or, you know, for weeks or months like other actors do in other movies. So if you see Natalie Portman kind of struggling to look like she believes in what she says, or Liam Neeson, or any of the other great actors in the prequels, explains a lot, that many of them were kind of in the dark in terms of what their roles were going to be. It's also, there's a whole bunch of green screening. I mean, people harp on this enough, but there's, if you can't act against another actor or an actual thing there, it's harder to act. That's what I've read. I don't have any personal experience. But, oh, you know what? I do a little bit. Live music. I was in a garage band when I was younger. And all I can tell you is, if you record a bunch of guys when they're playing live, when they're playing, everybody can see each other playing a part of the song that they're playing. The energy that you get from that performance is light years better than if you sat each individual musician in their own little recording room and had them play against a pre-recorded track of their bandmates. So let's say you have a performance where all four of the musicians are there playing a song. They start it, they finish a song, it's recorded, as opposed to each of them recording their own track separately and then playing to the pre-recorded music. The energy is just not there, and that's why some of the best jazz performances are live. You look at all the live albums with jazz players. Because it's like, recording studio, multiple takes. No, man. It's like, let's get it on the first take. If we make mistakes, we make mistakes. But the energy is there. Same with movies. If you're acting against nothing in front of you, how do you know? How do you feed off that energy? There is no energy there to feed off of. You can't dance. I'm going to bring it back. It's hard to dance when you sort of go into it blindly. I'm trying to force this into it. No, let's just get back to the whole naturalness of it. And another one of my issues with the prequels is it didn't feel like the actors were there just riffing, just being natural, having fun. They say that in sports, have fun. If you're not having fun in sports, you're probably not going to succeed. If you hear Kobe Bryant, who's going to retire this year, I'm going to have fun. I'm going to go out there and have fun. Because if I'm not having fun, then it's work. And you can't fly, man. If you're working, it's harder to fly. So, and I think that that whole effortless flying synergy, the certain energy, the group energy that you get from an ensemble cast hitting on all cylinders with the crew behind them, and everybody is on the same page and nothing is hidden. If you look at the backstage footage of The Force Awakens, these guys are having fun. They're still having fun. They're out, you know, promoting the movie, and they're still hanging out with each other. Just seeing Daisy Ridley and Oscar Isaac sing Baby, It's Cold Outside. Check that out. It's a YouTube video. Baby, It's Cold Outside, the Christmas song. And there's a little snippet of Daisy Ridley and Oscar Isaac singing it. And it's like they're having fun. We didn't see that with the cast of the prequels. They weren't out, you know, just being as a group with each other. You know, for better or worse, for, you know, for what it's worth, I think the dancing, and if you're going to dance, if you are uncomfortable with yourself, if you are self-conscious, if you don't know the material, if you haven't practiced enough, if you don't have the zen of the dance, you can try to dance, but people will see through you. And it will not seem natural or honest. And so the movies that I've talked about, it looks like they got the dance down. So on that note, I will talk to you soon. Again, thank you for, I'm going to check my usual checking self. We are now on 1 hour and 6 minutes. God bless you all for sticking with me this long. Until next time, this is Gerardo San Diego, and may the Force be with you. Thank you.